Hello, Roy here. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to The Roy Green Show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
I spoke in May of this year with Frank McKenna, the deputy chair of the TD Bank, former Canadian ambassador to the United States, and former premier of New Brunswick. And I spoke with Mr. McKenna because we had just found out about this the survey that was done, the study that was done by TD, that showed that $117 billion was lost over a seven-year period to the Canadian economy because we sell our oil at such a tremendous discount to the United States, essentially our only client. And I wanted to speak with him about that and what it really represents. Now, I'm going to play this back for you. Keep in mind, please, that it was recorded, it was done live on May the 5th. So we talked in part about, and I thought it was important to leave this in, because of the developing situation, we talked in part about the headbutting that was going on between Alberta and British Columbia over Trans Mountain, and then Saskatchewan involved, of course, as well. So you'll hear a bit of that. And like I said, just keep in mind this was done live on the 5th of May. Some things have changed, others have remained static, but it's important to hear. Here's my conversation with Frank McKenna. Your study, the TD Bank study, would show that $117 billion lost over 7 years of selling our oil at a discount to the United States. Would you speak to that, please?
Well, I think that it's consistent with many, many other studies that have been done, some even more recently, that point out the very sharp discount that we're receiving from President Trump and his friends in the United States for our oil, because we have no other markets that we can sell them to. So as a result of that, oil is discounted between $15 and $30 a barrel, going into the United States and big refineries down there. And meantime, the ultimate irony, of course, is that on the East Coast, we've got refineries that have to use oil that comes in at world prices. I think it's six to 700,000 barrels a day of oil coming in, being exported from around the world because we can't get access to Canadian oil. So it's the ultimate irony that we're paying through the nose at one end of the country and that we're getting hosed down at the other end of the country.
Did it surprise you that Energy East was stopped abruptly in the province of Quebec, particularly when they had gone through that horrific tragedy at Lac Megantic?
Yeah, look, ostensibly the reason given, which the Government of Canada tries to promulgate, is that the market conditions had changed for the company. That's not my view. My view is the regulatory burden became so high that no company could really expose their shareholders to those kinds of losses. Having seen how difficult it's been to build pipelines elsewhere, as a result, we don't end up with any access to national oil or gas in Atlantic Canada. We've got a refinery that's stranded there that has to pay world oil prices. We've got a massive investment potential of a new refinery that could put as many as 5,000 people a year to work for the next 5 or 6 years if we could have had access to that oil. A huge amount of wealth destroyed for us because of the inability to get a pipeline to our marketplace.
And now we're looking at an extension that's required for Trans Mountain Pipeline that has been approved by the federal government, and all the regulatory I's have been dotted and T's have been crossed, and the British Columbia government is going to the Court of Appeals to find out if they have the legislative power to stop it, and the federal government, I think, is just treading water. Mr. McKenna, how frustrating is it to see what's going on with Trans Mountain?
Well, it's extraordinarily frustrating, I'd say, as a citizen, but for our country as well. It's a clear example of the country not working appropriately. And let's remember a couple of things. First of all, this is not a new route. This route has transported oil for something like 60 years in the existing pipeline. In fact, it's been upgraded 5 or 6 times. What this is a new fight, not a new route. Secondly, there are at least 43 indigenous communities in the path of that pipeline that have signed benefit agreements with the pipeline proponent. So this mythology that all First Nations are against it is wrong. In fact, it would seem that not even the majority are. In fact, it would be a minority that would be. And thirdly, another myth that needs to be exploded is that this is not reducing the amount of oil being produced. On the contrary, Oil is being shipped by train. It's also being shipped at pipelines, which are so compressed that we're suffering huge discounts. So bottom line is oil is still being produced. Canadian taxpayers are getting absolutely savage because we're losing tens of billions of dollars a year because we just can't get the right economic rent for our resource. And I think that's just criminal.
It really is a head shaker, isn't it, that you have this, you have all of this waiting. It's all there. It's just waiting to be exported. And it's just a matter of completing the technical requirements, and then you can get at the business of exporting your oil at world prices and bringing money into this country, which would help everyone. It's just a tremendous head shaker, and I'm being polite when I say that. Do you have confidence that Trans Mountain is going to be completed, or do you think Kinder Morgan is just going to walk away, and then it's going to be up to Canadians to foot a $7.4 billion bill and still run into objections?
The pipeline's going to be built. It just can't it can't not be built. If that were to be the case, the rest of the world would look at us literally as the country that can't get things done. Trust me, I just got back from Asia, and I was talking to a lot of investors about LNG, which is something that BC wants. And these investors are saying, look, we need to see what's going to happen with Kinder Morgan. Why would we take a chance on a province that just can't get things done? Remember this as well, Roy, so that people can put it in perspective. If we applied the same logic today for projects in the past, we would not have a Trans-Canada Highway linking our country. We wouldn't have a railroad linking our country. We wouldn't have the St. Lawrence Seaway. We wouldn't have the Port of Vancouver. A lot of the projects which create huge wealth for our country would never be built if you applied the kind of criteria that we're seeing today. And for that reason as well, we have to demonstrate as a country that we work, that we're not just a collection of provinces with veto powers at the borders, but we're a country that actually works, and that each premier is bigger than his own individual province and also represents a national interest. And if we can't establish that principle, this country is doomed to really a second-class existence compared to the potential it would have to be a world leader.
I spoke with Premier Scott Moe of Saskatchewan twice in the last few weeks, and Premier Moe was talking about the British Columbia effort, Premier Horgan's effort to delay or stop the pipeline, the Trans Mountain completion, extension completion, and he said if the Premier, and I'm paraphrasing, but I'm close, said if the Premier of British Columbia can do that, then the question is, do we have a country?
Yeah, well, I can understand the frustration of the Premier here. I'm sure that Premier Horgan is principle driven. I have no reason to think otherwise. I think he's wrong on two very, very fundamental issues. And I think as he collects more experience as a Premier, he'll realize that. I can tell you, as a young Premier, I was wrong on issues that I wish I had had a more thoughtful approach to at the beginning. He's wrong, for example, in saying that his interest and his only interest is British Columbia. That's simply not the case. I've never had a day in which I couldn't proudly say that I was a Canadian first and a New Brunswicker second, and I think most Premiers are like that. This is a precious country that we have, and surely to goodness, we can pursue our provincial interest while respecting the national interest as well. Number two, the sense in one of his recent interviews that every individual First Nations has a veto. If that's the case, then he might as well throw the keys on the table and walk away from his province. The Supreme Court has not gone that far, even though I must confess they have thoroughly muddled the jurisprudence on this to the point where it's almost impossible to figure out what they're really saying. But if that's the case, that means that every First Nations would have to sign off. That's a bar that nobody can get over. And remember, when you go to First Nations communities, you'll often find that it's not just the chief that has to sign, but tribal elders may say they have a veto right as well. We have a project in New Brunswick where all of the reservations have signed off, and two grandmothers are picketing the site, claiming they've got the right to stop it. So we've got to have some common sense prevail here now, and we've got to We've got to establish some means of getting decisions made that are not going to be by absolute veto power of everybody involved. Otherwise, every province would have a veto. Every municipality might have a veto in the country. That's a recipe for disaster, for gridlock and disaster. So we just can't allow those kinds of precedents to prevail if we're going to have a real country.
So there's the deputy chair of TD Bank, Frank McKenna. Now, this is a fly-by-the-seat-of-your-underpants question, but I want to hear your thoughts. Do you believe that construction on Trans Mountain will restart during the current mandate of Justin Trudeau or before the 21st of October of next year? Do you think that the determination is there in the Prime Minister to get it done? Al is in Barrie, Ontario. Al, go ahead, please.
Thanks for taking my call, Roy. No, this is a disgrace, but I believe that it's 100% deliberate on Justin Trudeau's part and Gerald Butts. They've played this stall tactic brilliantly. They're going to continue to stall and stall. They've got the Aboriginal groups backing them up. They've got the courts. They've got the protesters. They're going to block this thing, and Trudeau all the while can sit in the background and play innocent. This is deliberate. This isn't a mistake. He's done exactly what he's planned, and he's planned this brilliantly, and it's a disgrace, but he's going to get his way, and there's going to be nothing built.
All right, Al, thank you for the call. Just want to hear what you have to say, folks. In the brief period we have for some calls here at 800-263-2428. To Winnipeg and Bob.
Good afternoon, Roy.
Good afternoon, sir.
You know, before the last election, I had a couple of calls to you, and I didn't like the way you were treating Trudeau and the Liberals and this sort of thing. However, I'm starting to go over to the dark side. As far as I'm concerned, Trudeau is more interested in his photo ops and nicey-nicey, etc., and he's not interested in what is good for Canada. I'm an accountant. I worked 39 years as an accountant for the federal government. I see the waste of money. There's lots of money wasted, and he could save us money and get money. My money is that he will not have the construction started before because he doesn't want to risk not winning. He's looking more after what is better for the Trudeau government, the Liberals, and I'll tell you, I won't be voting for the Liberal in my constituency in Winnipeg. Did you hear that, Mr. Duguid? And I'm hoping that many others won't because they are ruining Canada.
Bob, and nobody screened you on what you were going to say on the air, right?
Nobody.
Okay. I appreciate the call, Bob. Thank you very much. From Winnipeg to Ancaster, Ontario, right outside Metropolitan Hamilton. Frank, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I hope so yourself, too, and I sure you are. My prognostication is that it will be built because the people that are opposing it will be desperate on their knees praying for better up gas prices. That's going to be a must. The prices of gas are going to go up so high in this country, and we're facing a trade problem. It's going to be forced on us, and they better get digging, and I think they will, in answering your question, Roy.
Before the 21st of October of next year.
I have to. I don't care anything about Trudeau. Someone's going to go out there and say, this is going to be done.
I agree.
There's going to also be a revolution in this country.
You know, I agree. Not only Trans Mountain, but Energy East. Keystone's been stopped in the United States. Mm-hmm. That has to be restarted.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, people want jobs. They want a strong economy. And it's not good enough to, when everything's caving in around you, to suddenly say, what happened? You have to be aware of what's going on. Frank, I do appreciate your calls. Thank you so much. If you want to hear more, subscribe to The Roy Green Show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you find your favorites. And if you like what you hear, leave us a review and tell a friend. I'm Roy Green. Have a great weekend.